So in these evening talks, we really try to explain a little more about the process. This process of meditation. Being on retreat, there are special circumstances that we actually have. And so to be able to sense what it means to be present here, but not only, understand the fullness of the experience, and maybe understand also the aim, the purpose. I'd like tonight to actually begin with a quote, because the definition of mindfulness was asked to me today, and again, the word in Pali, which is this language, ancient Indian language that the Buddha used, the word is sati. And I think there's a very good description, definition, from Bhikkhu Bodhi, who, if you're a little bit acknowledged, he's a very wonderful monk from the American monk from linked to the Sri Lankan tradition, and he has translated a lot of the ancient text. And this is what he says. He says, the word is sati. And this word sati, meaning mindfulness, derives from a root meaning to remember. But as a mental factor, which we're actually cultivating, it signifies presence of mind, attentiveness to the present, rather than the faculty of memory regarding the past. It has the characteristic of not wobbling. You know wobbling? Not floating away from the object that is chosen. Its function is absence of confusion. So there are quite a number of aspects here. This quality of mindfulness is always happening with the present moment experience. And today we've chosen a very clear, simple object of experience, which was mainly the breath. Right? And so we come again and again to this experience of being with this one experience, not floating away, and in a way we notice that its function is then absence of confusion, meaning that we're actually living the experience of that sensation as it is. So it's pretty simple, not so easy to do, right? You may have noticed that there's a sense of connection where it requires a steadiness. So whatever object we take, the purpose is not so much which object, because you notice that when we did the walking meditation, we had the whole body experience, right? So it's not only breath, right? We open to sound and we open to other types of experience. So actually, we take the purpose of different types of experience to reinforce what? Quality of presence. So actually the aim is the mindfulness itself. So we see the reality as it is. So what does it mean? Because I was asked in one of the groups, what does it mean to see the reality? We've spoken of this yesterday and again today. So the meaning of this is to be able to actually experience whatever it is that is experienced, not through concepts, not through the filter of mental activity, which is very uncommon. Okay? I'm sure you've had the experience of thinking about the breath today, right? So we live from that place of thinking, thought, constructs, ideas, how the breath should be, how it's not, and we have this way of really realizing that it's not that simple because we have this overlay of constructs. So we live very much in the world of ideas. And the whole point of coming close, as he says, not wobbling, not floating away, is to actually live a little more at the depth of the experience, not live at the surface. So I'm going to give a very simple example here. When you're in a restaurant, you first read the menu, don't you? And when you read the menu, there's a way that you have plenty of ideas of what you're going to be eating, right? If you stayed in that restaurant reading the menu, could you have an actual taste of the food? It's not very satisfying, is it? Right? I mean, no doubt you can read the menu for a number of hours and days. You don't have the taste. The actual experience is that you have to taste the food, right? Live the experience. In meditation, it's a little bit the same. The concept, the idea of breath is not actually living the experience of breathing. It's the thought. So we have this confusion when he says its function is absence of confusion. We very much, a lot of the time, confuse one thing for another, which means thoughts are not the experience of sensation of breath. So that's the whole first aspect of coming into presence and being in this very situation so we can actually be a little more in touch with life. It's meaningful. It's experiential understanding. It brings us to a level of wisdom where we begin to sense that we can be more alive. So we usually do not look in what is really there in front of us. The way that we have is that we have a screen of thoughts, ideas, how it should be, how it's not, how we'd like it to be, and it's not. So this is a little bit how we have limitations for ourselves. I like the quote from John Lennon. He says, you know, life is happening while you're planning your future. Meaning that we miss so much on life. They're great songs, actually, where so much of it is just like, oh, floating by, you know. I wish I had this and this, and then we're dreaming our life. That's concepts, ideas, and life is here. It's present, and we don't taste much of it. So it has consequences. There's a pain, unnecessary pain, that comes from that level of conceptualizing. We spend much of our time trying to make ourselves feel better or trying to fix ourselves. And that has a lot of consequences. It's amazing how, meanwhile, the world of kind of real experience flows by untouched, and we're never perfect enough. The way we look is not good enough. The way we think about ourselves. And then, of course, it's projected on other people. So it's never enough. And in Vipassana meditation, there's a real sense of recognizing the impulses, the drives, the forces to actually run away from what is, to constantly try to have it differently. The constant impulses to run away in the terms of making ourselves more comfortable and run away from what is uncomfortable. And when we begin to stop, to pause, exactly how we're doing it on this retreat, to have this quality of presence where we're in this being mode rather than trying to change constantly the experience, we begin to sense something very deep for ourselves. we look into this reality and we're more in touch. And the ironic thing is that real peace will come when we stop chasing it. So this is quite meaningful for ourselves, that this chase to get, chase to really gain, when it's happening in each and every moment, that constant drive, the impulses, are part of the journey, and we begin to sense this. How even with the breath, did you want the breath to be different than what it was today? Raise your hand. Did it happen? Yeah, several of you, right? And I'm sure not everybody raised their hands. just a little bit more, you know, of something. A little longer, that wanting force. So this is part of the process where we begin to sense, wow, I always wanted to be different. That constant pursuit of gratification. It's just a condition. It's just a condition. So we can really sense that there is peace that can be found when we realize this and we don't react towards it. We don't feed the reactivity. So practicing sitting and walking all day long like we have, and I must say that for many of you it's the first retreat, that first day, it's the most difficult. It really is. Because of the adjustment, you know? There's such a shift between regular life and retreat mode. It is a different mode. So it's almost over. It's true, it gets easier. So we've practiced very diligently today, sitting and walking. And there may be the sense, oh, I haven't accomplished much today, you know, nothing has really happened. And yet, you can't evaluate. Something deep down happens. Even if it has been hard, there's a softening. There's a way that we actually are more in receptivity. We even see through our habits, through our drives. The great Thai forest monk who now died, his name was Achan Cha, and he says, we are like chickens sitting on their nest all day, and something eventually happens. It's a funny image, isn't it, to have this, and you are. I love this image, actually, that you're sitting there and you're really kind of cuddling your nest and you're sitting and you think, nothing's happening. Isn't it true? And yet, something eventually happens. We're discovering ourselves. We're opening our heart. We're really noticing also all the beautiful qualities of heart and mind that Arya has mentioned. So we learn and we grow and we're able to move beyond these layers of ideas of how we should be and that we're not. How the thinking mind also, the judging mind, can be seen through. And it's not the reality. It's just a thought. It's just a construct. So you see that we move really in a scope where experiential understanding, because this is what it's about, we live the experience, and it's living the experience that enables that real sense of seeing through our ideas, seeing through our constructs, and finally we come in contact with, it's okay. We can allow a little more, and a little more, and a little more. So this is new territory. What happens is that we begin to trust the mindfulness itself. With time, with practice, really putting ourselves into the experience moment by moment, this very clear, simple presence of mind helps us turn our attention to be more present. And as we're more mindful, we gain in trust that we are enabling the possibility of being more in touch with life, how it is, simply how it is, not how it should be and it's not, and so we're constantly in conflict, but just opening a little more and opening a little more. And so this is one way that we can actually talk about freedom. There are many ways that we can talk about freedom in this teaching. But one of the ways is actually this freedom from thinking that things are not okay, or we're not okay, life is not okay. And it's often called a medicine. The teaching is called a medicine in the text. We take the medicine, we experience it thoroughly, we let it touch every aspect of our lives, and very clearly we begin to sense, wow, there's a healing. In that way, for me, it was so obvious that there was such a healing effect on the mind, in the body, in the sense of really finding more connection and more peace, more harmony, and not by chasing it. That's the point. See, we chase after peace, we chase after harmony, and yet it can only be found where we are. So this is not obvious on the first day of a retreat. No doubt. We probably haven't perceived a lot of freedom today, and probably have been in contact with more of the painful aspect or the difficult mind states, and it's also normal. So we open the field of experience, and actually, because of the two groups, like saying, oh, but I've had sleepiness, and I've had restlessness, and I've tried to be with the breath. And it was so difficult to be with the breath because there was this and this. And very clearly, they are stated in the teachings. Meaning they're really laid out. What you experience today is laid out in the teachings. So it's very helpful to know that it's nothing wrong. And actually, some of you said, oh, you too, you know. I see everybody next to me and everybody's calm and happy and well, and I thought I was the only one suffering here on this cushion. And this is why group interviews are so great, because you say, oh, you really had the same experience than I did? And everybody had the same experience. So in case you didn't have a group today, this is how we see how common. And it's great because it's about the human condition. And it's not about me being so special that I feel or I think that I'm actually a failure, not being able to be with the breath. So they're laid out. What you experience as being difficult today are called the five difficult mind states. At least some of you. Right? And they're described and they're integrated into this journey to awakening or wakefulness. So what are they? The first is sense desire. Right? This way that we have, a way that we grasp, or there's greed, there's expectation. It's very obvious that it's the wanting mind. The wanting, but that is caused in terms of stress, right? We have this kind of expectation and and its kind of unsettledness, wanting absolutely another experience. Have you had that today? Did you want another experience than the one that was happening? Yes, probably so, right? So this is a force, it's a strength, which is, of course, causing some imbalance when we don't actually notice it and recognize it, because we're not able to be just with the very simple experience, which was today, just being with the breath. Okay, being with the breath, one breath, two breaths, and oops, wanting something else, okay? And we can be mindful of that wanting, of that sense desire. It can be totally seen for what it is, right? Now, these forces, wanting on one side, and then the second one is exactly the opposite, right? Not wanting. The aversion. And this may, of course, take so many, many aspects. But if there's wanting on one side, there's not wanting on the other, right? So it's the push and pull. Aversion, rejection. And so what is it that is happening? We, of course, want more pleasant. Whatever it is. More pleasantness. Pleasant in the body, pleasant mind states, more pleasant. And of course, we don't want the unpleasant. So this is exactly where we will be meeting these forces of push and pull. And they're stated, they're very clearly stated in the teachings. And we begin to learn to work with them rather than react against them. And we'll be, of course, seeing this. So how I relate. If I want the breath to be different, there's wanting. If there's a little body sensation which is unpleasant, and there's rejection, there's aversion, there's aversion, there's rejection. So it's very clear that we can be mindful. Then the two next ones are also something that we've experienced. The third is sleepiness or drifting away, and the fourth is agitation. So these two also, right? Have you had sleepiness? Yes. What happens? It's a low energy. So there's low energy in the body and it's normal. You know, we may have come with some tiredness. And so here we are, and actually we've stopped doing, so we're just in being. And the energy is low. So we're trying to be with the breath, and there's sleepiness. First thing is to be aware, present to that, noticing, being mindful of sleepiness. Right? So how does it feel? So of course we say the thought is, okay, I'm sleepy. But that's the thought. So the experience of sleepiness, how is it? Is it like, oh, the body feels really a lot of weight, and it may be the eyes, you know, feel heavy, and there's a whole field of experience. So we very quickly say, oh yeah, there's sleepiness, but then we're not really aware of the actual experience. We have the concept, the idea of I'm sleepy. But I explore a little bit what it means. What does it mean in the body, in the actual experience? So not the thought about being sleepy, but the felt sense, the feeling, right? And as long as you can be with that experience, you can explore that. As much as you can explore also the breath. At a certain point, if you feel that, you know, it's really carrying you away, then there are skillful means, like opening the eyes, right? Walking a little bit more briskly, meaning a little faster to wake up the energy. Standing up in the meditation hall. I've done hours of standing meditation, which is great. I love it more and more, actually, because it's true, after hours you have the buttock that hurts. Just standing, and just like a dancer, you know, just wow. The field of energy and there's a way that the alignment of the body is different. And of course, you can have your eyes open. And so that brings some new energy in the body when you're standing. So you can stand in the meditation hall. So all of this is not to actually shift or change, but to support ourselves to be more in tune and present. Then there's the restlessness. I think that's the kind of the hardest. Restlessness or agitation, it can be physical or mental, and there's a lot of thoughts, right? You can't be with 2 breaths in a row. It's, oof, the jump, mind jumps. We are actually in a way that we open a little bit more the space. And here again, if you open more the field of body experience rather than be just with the breath, you give some spaciousness. And it allows for that agitation to be a little more happening and at ease. The fifth is doubt. So doubt, that's one that is sectical doubt. It's not just the doubt of, okay, knowing or investigation, exploration, has nothing to do with that. The sectical doubt is like, I wonder really how this has to do with my life. How can this really bring some happiness in my life? So many, many thoughts, you know. So is this, if we've done some other practice, if this form of practice better compared to another one or less? So there's doubt, right? We begin to think. And actually, it's a very clear way that if we don't notice doubt, it can keep us into a halt. So there are many things we can doubt. We can doubt the style of teaching. We can doubt the teachers. Sometimes it happens rather than have trust. But mostly what I feel is the most helpful to watch, if that is happening. And for me, it was very clearly some aspect that was difficult, is my own capacity, self-doubt, to be able to actually engage or commit or even go through a day of practice. And so if there is that manifestation of, oh, I don't think I can do this, it's just a thought of doubt in the mind. Really care to listen to it and yet not take that to be the truth. It's a thought. It really is just a thought. So how much we give reality and truth to the thoughts that are manifesting, a lot, right? We believe the thoughts. And so when we begin to sense the thought is, oh no, I can't, and then we repeat it 5 minutes later, no, I really can't. And I've got to do something about the situation, right? And so there's a way that you fuel that drive, and we kind of feed, no, it's not possible, no, it's not possible, rather than support the mindfulness and just say, oh, okay, I can see this. I can actually meet this experience. So then the push and pull syndrome really are just seen for what they are. And we begin to be able to be a little more in the present moment. So these five, they're mentioned in the teachings. They happen either very clearly in isolation. Sometimes they happen all five together. Like the wanting and the not wanting, and then there's doubt which comes along, and then of course the doubt feeds the restlessness, there's agitation, and then we're so tired that we end up totally sleepy and out of meditation. So very clearly, they can definitely feed on each other. And it's a cycle. Right? It's rare to just have, oh, there's just the sleepiness and doom. Well, no, now you doubt. Of course, you doubt that you can do it, right? That you can actually do the practice. and that creates agitation. So you want to see this happen. When these mind states are present, they actually allow for a deepening of the understanding of the mind, how it functions, how mind and body function. So, in a way, they're difficult, but we learn from them. At least that's what I see, that we actually learn from them. So, it's not to reject them. The way that we are with them is where we learn. So, as best we can, you are, oh, mindful of doubt, mindful of agitation, mindful. How do we do it? How do we work with these states? Rather than react. And there's plenty of skillful means to be able to relate. Okay? So, open the field of presence in a way, standing up. If there's agitation, give it a little more space. Change the speed of the walking meditation, opening the eyes, just very easeful ways. But if we're able to be more in relationship with these tendencies, we're less caught in them. We're less entangled because we don't have the idea that it's wrong, that they're a problem. See what I mean? How much I create problem is when I make myself. That's the problem. I have a problem. And quite a number of you said, but my problem is... And I said, yeah, if you make problem, then you have problem, right? And that's that my saying. It's a saying from a great Sri Lankan monk. He says, you make problem, you have problem. So it's how you see it. If you see it as a problem, then you react against it. If you react against it, then you're struggling. So you see the cycle, huh? Which is cause for more pain. So we learn, and we're here. We're going to be giving you plenty of instructions and ideas to actually be in a place of presence where, rather than resisting, is how can I be with this? Again. Open. How can I be with this? But the first thing is all these ideas that it should be this way. My meditation is wrong, or I can't do this, right? What meditation should look like? And of course, it's not looking like what we would like. Peaceful, absence of thoughts, no body pain, only happy mind states. Wouldn't that be the greatest meditation? Well, life is a little more complex. And not only meditation, but also life, right? You can't control everything. You're really noticing that, yeah, to some extent you can make choices. Of course we make choices. But then we don't have in our life only happy mind states. Absence of thoughts, lightness of heart, never have a body pain. It's not real. It's just not real. It's dreamland. So this is how we, how can I come into freedom with the way it is? And it begins like, I should feel good, and I'm not feeling good. I should feel good, and I'm not feeling so good. So, if that happens, it's just a thought. You notice, wanting is present. What's happening? Sayadaw Upandita, who was my main teacher for quite a number of years, and I think Arya mentioned him last night, you know, it was amazing how each and every single moment that he was teaching, his message to us as meditators was, the present moment experience, whatever it is the best one. Whatever it is. It was just so incredible to have him say this. He said, why? Why do I say this? Because you can learn from it. You can be mindful of it. And it was onward leading. Onward leading meaning that it was a way that in the meditators we built trust. We really built trust that, oh, okay, this is part of the experience. It's part of the meeting. And there is no contradiction. And actually, if you have the Satipatthana Sutta, which is the manual of the meditation, the very clear instructions of meditation, the Buddha will say in that foundation of mindfulness, mindfulness of the body as it is, mindfulness of the breath, and the monk, which means the meditator, because we are here in meditation, knows the experience as it is, really knows the experience as it is. That's the easiest way to actually relate. Now, with all the difficulties that I just stated, sometimes there's resistance. And we'll just respect the resistances. What does it mean? Ah, wanting is present. I'm aware of wanting, aware of not wanting. There's an aversion in the mind. Maybe just a little contraction. Even it can be slight frustration. Okay, this is the experience. If I can, just be with it till you see how it serves the meditation. So trust can build whatever the experience, if we know how to relate rather than reject and resist. So a big part of the freedom comes from this. What is the result? Is that we let ourselves be a little more at ease with what shows up, or a lot more at ease. We don't chase. And so that aspiration that I talked about last night, actually, is coming from letting life be what it is. Just a little more, and a little more. And that aspiration is exactly at the same level of letting go of the reactivity. The more there's an inclination to allow, the more there's a letting go of the resistance and the reactivity in terms of really getting contracted or limiting ourselves. And so this is a movement which is very organic. We can't force it. It's natural. It's going to come slowly, and you'll see. For those of us who have practiced before, you know, right? You know. So first retreat, it's great. You're here. A little difficult, and we learn how we can help ourselves rather than limit ourselves. So how do we limit ourselves? Very much around blame, judging mind, right? Contracting, it's not okay, I'm not good enough, worry. So we add fuel here, and very clearly we can choose another path, which is more allowing. And the metta helps. The metta, the kindness, the care, that beautiful quality of heart-mind that Arya introduced us today, really is helpful. There's no doubt that there is a formal practice of metta, but there's also a way that this quality is embedded in the mindfulness. Because mindfulness, true mindfulness, it has no greed, no aversion, or no confusion. So there is that quality of kindness which is embedded. Then we're less in pain. So we're here, quality of mindfulness, feeling a breath, feeling a sensation, feeling an emotion. Learning how to connect. We lose that connection. And it's okay. We notice. Mind slipped away. There's a thought. Present to thought. We can be. And then we come to this ground and place that we've been connecting. Like just very simple connection with breath again, connection with breath, and very naturally we'll begin to be open to other types of experiences. So there's a way we cultivate that quality of mindfulness, and that's how we engage more and more under spaciousness. So these seeds of wisdom or love and compassion, they're within us. And Arya mentioned this, you know, it's not something that we need to get, which is not here. It's so helpful to hear this, that they're here. We peel the layers if they're hidden, meaning the layers of maybe some confusion or maybe some aversion. But, ooh, slowly, slowly, there's a way that we actually feel more these wonderful qualities of heart and mind. That if there's wisdom, what does that mean? It means I see a little more clearly how I cause myself some pain when there's judgment, for example. Or I see much more clearly when there's so much expectation, wanting things to be different. So this is very deep, what we're actually looking into. Very deep. Now, I do want to say that we're very fortunate, because what we have done today is a truth path that has been walked by so many beings for so many centuries. And it's a roadmap. So it's not something we invent, Arya and I, today, you know, even though we don't give a lot of reference. And I do want to really respect and have so much gratitude for the way that it's 2,600 years, this path. And so many people have actually walked this path, so lived the experience, right? And the outcome, you get to know yourself in and out, in and out. And life connection deepens. And then we give ourselves the opportunity to relate to others from that depth of understanding, the beauty, discovering who actually we are. So it's actually learning about life. And the Buddha said very clearly, he said, in this fathom-long body, the whole universe can be discovered. In this body. In this body. In this mind, in ourselves. Understanding the human condition, understanding the human experience. If we understand ourselves, there's no doubt we are much more likely able to sense what's happening in another being. So this mindfulness has wisdom in itself, and it protects the mind from going astray. So this is the journey. It begins and it ends when we face this reality. It's a beautiful journey. I'm going to be ending with a nice little quote from Helen Keller. Helen Keller is a writer. She's an American lady whose autobiography is actually quite incredible. She was blind, deaf, and dumb, which means that a lot of her sense doors were not available to her. And it's probably the story that I've read where there's most sensitivity. It's amazing how she could sense life. And so she dedicated a lot of time to actually be living in the moment, experiencing. And what she says here is from her inner experience, from inner understanding. She says, when one door of happiness closes, another opens. But often we look so long at the closed door that we do not see the one that has opened for us. So we'll sit in silence for just a minute or two, and I will reread this quote, which is so meaningful and hopefully inspiring for us. When one door of happiness closes, another opens. But often we look so long at the closed door that we do not see the one that has opened for us. May we see the door that has opened today in many, many different kinds of ways, so many little openings. Flickers of understanding, of insights, being in touch with kindness, care, gentleness, with the truth. Unexpected discoveries. May we see into the truth. To reality. Maybe be well, happy, and free from limitations.